session number 24830, Reel 5.
Mr. Henderson, Reel 5. We're talking about you, when you joined the assault platoon of the support company, First Battalion Royal Norfolk Regiment. We're going through the sort of people in charge. We got as far as Sergeant Bell. What about the corporals?
Yeah, I remember we had a couple of, we had two corporals, two full corporals.
Do you know the names?
I can't remember them. I really can't remember them. And we had two or three lance corporals.
Which guest
became, one of them, Barbara Guest became one of them.
Did you have any particular pals that you made
early on? I was quite friendly with Barbara Guest as I joined the platoon. Yeah, when he was with me. And how he joined the platoon when we was in Hong Kong, about a month after I did, a month or so after I did. I was quite friendly with several of the guys there, those Bill Chapman, and I was quite friendly with him and Johnny Byfield and one or two more. There were several of them I was quite friendly with. A sort of a strange existence, really, living in a place like that. You know, you certainly have friends, and quite close friends. You know, I mean, you share bunkers with them and all this.
Were there bunkers at Pycock?
We were in bunkers. We'd made ourselves bunkers.
Tell me about that. This is in the reserve position. What were the reserve position bunkers like?
Well, they were just dug out of the ground. We'd dig them into the hill. And build up a wall at the front with sandbags and things, and put a roof on, and make up fires to put in them to keep us warm out of anything what was gone. Burn petrol on them, and I think of them now, they frighten me to death.
How did it work? I mean, without,
well, just a drip feed. Used to start it off with sucking on a pipe and let the petrol, had the petrol can on the roof, a jerry can full of petrol on the roof of the bunker, and you had the pipe going inside. And for the main box, you got an empty ammunition box and put some sand in the bottom. Made a chimney out of any tubes you could find up out through the roof. And you put some sand in or some soil in the bottom of an ammunition box, and you'd have a flexible tube, and you'd start it off by siphoning some petrol, which is then dribbled into the sand, and you'd ignite it. And that used to burn away there, and the petrol used to keep dribbling down the pipe from a jerry can on the roof.
Sounds dangerous.
And everything got hot. The ammunition box got red hot, the chimney got red hot, but it was lovely and warm. In the mansion cave, what about sleeping in a thing like that, frightening you to death, or you think of it now?
Were you aware of the risk of fumes and things like that?
I tell you, it's funny, I don't know what it is, you sort of get into the sort of condition of mind, you're sort of a survival thing, and you've got to have something to keep warm, and if not, you've got to freeze to death, so you've got to have something to keep warm. When we first got out, it was very cold, and very, very cold indeed. Some nights that was full. Dear, I mean, with all the equipment on, and some days were very cold. And you just get into this thing, you get like a blooming animal, really, you know, you're scrounging about for a bit of heat and that type of thing. And we was in this position for a while. While we were there, I remember we built an officer's mess headquarters company. We used to go there
You build one?
Well, out of sandbags and bits of wood and things. You know, that's what the salt pioneers, we used to do that, don't we? And anything we could scrounge up. We also made an oven in the cooker tent, working on a similar sort of petrol system, so that cook could cook some food. With a petrol thing.
Tell us a bit more about the office. Sorry,
how big was it?
Well,
it wasn't very big, I don't suppose. That was about 14 feet by about 14 feet, something like that, dug into the hill. And built, you know, because you dig into the hill, you're sort of the full depth at the back, but at the front, obviously, because you're on a hill, you know, you have to build it up with sandbags. Put a roof on, made one or two seats and things out of bits of wood and anything we could find and put in. We used to do things we got and made an oven, I know, for the cook in the cookhouse and that type of thing. That was okay there, it weren't too bad there. I even remember going playing football while we were there. Someone said to me who knew me, who was in the battalion, and he came along and he said to me, somebody came up to me and said, so and so, say, you used to play football when you come in the army, and I said, yeah. And I went and played football. I can't remember who we played, but. Just a piece of flat, sort of muddy ground somewhere, against another battalion, I think. We were in race somewhere. We weren't that far back, were we? About 3 miles or something like that, but. A couple of miles back, get the occasional show. But
did you have proper kit, or were you just playing in the uniform?
I think we just played in the uniform, is what I remember, you know. Yeah.
It says that, you know, you did various tasks, you know, including there was some reconnaissance. I don't know whether you were on any of that. Reconnaissance to establish routes in case the battalions in front were counterattacks. Would you be on any of that, would you?
Or we went out. I remember going out a couple of times. I remember going out one day. I was supposed to be rounding up with all the guerrillas, which were because the North Koreans could sort of come in and mix in with the ordinary people, and you wouldn't know whether they were North Koreans or not, would you? And there's getting a bit of guerrilla stuff going on. These people coming in, and we were supposed to be rounding them up, but that didn't come up much. That was just sort of behind the lines, that was. But we used to go out quite a lot, and Wormald, he was always keen.
This is when you were at Peacock Hill, the
reserve? Yeah. And we used to go out occasionally on a patrol for all sorts of different reasons, really. Because if there was any gone, Wormald would always volunteer us for them. And I always seemed to finish up on it, woman thing.
What would the patrols be like behind the lines? You mainly presume for infiltrators.
That's right, yeah, that sort of thing. You sort of position yourself and they were supposed to drive them to you. But we didn't really see too much on them things.
What was it like, territory-wise, the patrol line?
Well, that was about, yeah, well, it was very rugged ground. That was just all hills and mountains and footpaths and that sort of thing. Well, we did the assault pioneers. They were practicing while we reserve boat crossings in pontoons across the Imogen. I get these rifle companies were coming up and we had to show them how to do it. You know, we used to have these pontoon, these little flat bottom boats where you get about a dozen men in them with the paddles and you paddle across the river and when you came up on the shore the other side, the front two would jump out and grab hold of the boat and the others would keep paddling and then you'd jump out. So you came up the banks with a boat. And then when they did it, we used to use plastic explosives and stuff and make it more realistic and put them in the water. So there was a lot of bangs and water flying about. I remember we actually blew one of our blokes up during that.
What, kill him?
No. No, I saw him again at Aldershot. He come after me, come see me. I never done it, he said, wouldn't you, was it? I say no. And he jumped out of this boat and someone threw one in the river. We used to just get a bit of plastic explosive and put a detonator in it and a bit of fuse and throw it in the water. And that's the old story. We've been doing it all day, familiarity breed contempt. You start throwing them nearer and nearer to the boat to see how, because you're getting good at it. To the end, you throw it too near. And someone was jumping out of the boat and that went up and that broke his legs. I think he went up in the air about 6 foot. Cool, I remember that. I remember running up to the Plymouth MP on this bridge, telling them we'd get an ambulance there. But, yeah, we did things like that. Yeah, with explosives. We used to, if I had, sometimes, you know, you'd be in a position in the Plymouth, in one of the rifle companies, headquarters would be trying to dig out a command centre or something like that, and they'd find a lot of rock, and we'd have to go along with a little bits of explosives and get the rock out. And the problem was getting round in that part of the battle area at the time too, was used minefields where they'd been backwards and forwards out over them, and they were partly used and partly not, you know. And the blooming things were finishing up, some of them in no man's land, and they were getting a bit iffy. You didn't know where the mines were or without how many were there or what anything else. We used to have to go and do something about that sometimes.
What, actually clear them?
Or try and get a pathway through or something like that, yeah.
What about wiring duties? It mentions wiring, or was that the normal companies were on wiring? This is still while you're in reserve.
Yeah, well, I remember going somewhere. There's a photograph in that book. I remember that. I can't see myself on it, but I remember being there. It's so familiar. That ground. Yeah, we did some bad wiring.
How did you go about wiring? I mean, what type of wire were you using?
Well, just only bad wire, didn't we? And just putting it on the poles. And iron posts, you know, wiring it on, that sort of thing. Just reeling it out on, so you get a piece of something put between two of us, used to roll, you know, unreel it, and we'd fix it to the posts. You know, that was just nothing really. I suppose sometimes that was a hooped wiring, you know, what you just pulled out in hoops. No, I didn't like that. You always finish up getting loads of cuts bad on the wire. Yeah. So we're there for a while, and, you know, that was sort of quiet, really. So reasonably quiet.
I wonder whether you knew much about your company commander, you know, the support company. I mean, it's down as Major Cooper Key. I don't know whether you remember him.
No.
Or whether you came in touch with the Colonel, Oliver.
No, very, very little. I saw him, obviously, and that's about all I can say.
And what about some of the characters? I don't know whether they're Paul Boxall or Winky Fit or Gilchrist, any of those?
Well, we saw them, but very little. I mean, we saw very little of the other rifle companies. You know, we used to see them now and again, but I didn't really come in and have much contact with them. In fact, when we left that position...
That's about, 19th of April, I think it says here.
We left that position. We actually went forward to a... we took over... Our brigade took over from the American Can-Do Division. And our platoon, somehow or the other, we finished up on the tallest hill in the area, I think it was 315 or 325 or something 355. Like that. 355, that's the one. I was a knoll off the front of that, going towards Chinks. At the end of this sort of peninsula was a knoll, really. And in front of that was a lot of dead ground. So we were almost to the partly to the side and partly to the front of this 355. And we finished up while I was, not all of us, not all of the whole assault pioneer battalion, but I was about, I think about 10 or a dozen of us finished up on this knoll. Cause
that, would that be the finger? Would it be known as a finger or is it another one?
It could be. I can't.
No, yeah.
I don't really know. And we finished up on there, and that was murder on there. You were there, and we were attached to the Welsh Regiment. We used to get.
It says it was a composite group called E Company with the assault pioneers plus 20 others.
Right. Yeah.
That's not how you're describing it. That's not how you remember it, is it?
Well, I suppose I must have been more of us up there, but that was, I was the assault pioneers, and we had about, I don't know, it was 2 or 3 weeks up there. I think that was 3 weeks.
Can you describe your positions on this? Let's just call it the knoll, because it might not be the finger, I don't know that. So, this knoll,
yeah.
Hill 355,
yeah.
What were the positions like? Can you describe it?
Well, we were just sort of dug in. At the end of this, we were on the end of this knoll thing. And, well, not completely the end, sort of, they were sort of halfway down, and we could see over a lot of the dead ground in front of 355, and that was our purpose of being there. But you were on almost continuous blinking mortar and shell fire. That was, well, nearly every day, nearly every afternoon type thing. And that was definitely iffy out there. I mean, because you was getting out towards in the middle of no man's land. You was several long way out in front of the rest of the positions.
Now, what was it like? I mean, it's the first time you've been on the shelf, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a bit horrendous, really. I mean, that was just a war time. I mean, you know, people were getting killed and injured, injured particularly, and not so much killed, well, too many, but that was sort of all around you, really, and whatever you'd done, you know, it happened. And at night, we also, at night, they used to have to be about, every third night we used to get that. As an individual, every third night that'd be your turn. You went out about another 300 or 400 yards towards the end of this knoll, and you got in a listening post. And you were then way out in the middle of no man's land, right in the middle.
And what was listening post duty like? What was the listening post like? Can you describe it?
Well, it was just about four or five trenches.
How deep?
By foot, so just so you could see over the top, there was two men in a trench. And you got in that trench just as it got dark, and you stayed there until just before it got daylight. Now, in the front of that position, where we were, and as you went out there, were all dead bodies. They'd been there all the winter, but by the time the Americans had left them there, all these dead chinks. And in the, as we were there, the weather began to turn milder and warmer, and these bodies began to thaw out. Well, you can imagine how the smell was. And we tried to bring some in, but they opened fire on us. And, but that was, we used to pass them. Every two or three used to pass on the way out to this listening position. But then you had to stay awake all night that night.
What was it like? I mean, how nervy were you?
Very nervy, really. I mean, you got there and you just sit there and look at darkness till dawn.
Could you see anything?
Well, you could see one or two. And of course, you could see things that weren't really there after a few hours, couldn't you? You'd say to your mate, is that somebody? And we took this position over from the Americans, And I was about 4 hours went out with the Americans to find out where it was the first night. And I always remember it because they were talking all night. And the sergeant kept going from one train to the other. I said, what's everyone talking for? Well, they keep quiet. I didn't want to know anyone. No, we were there. He said, well, if not, you get so nervous. So, well, she bloody got to shut up and keep quiet. We don't want anyone nowhere. So, well, you haven't get attacked. I said, well, you will do if you're any patrol going along, they'd stumble into you. And anyway, that was quite nervy. We used to do that one night, she was up all night. The next night.
But did anything ever happen, you know?
Yeah, they was. Not while I was there. Not whilst I was there. But they did, while we were in that position. There was, they did have some trouble. One or two boys got injured out there. Anybody got killed. One or two of them got injured out there.
But not on your night.
But not on the night I was there,
you
fortunately.
You never actually heard or saw anything?
I think, well, yeah, we saw a couple of patrols, certainly.
Chinese patrols?
Yeah, right. Chinese patrols. They were Chinese patrols out front there. And definitely.
Did you open fire?
Pardon?
Would you open fire or would you?
No, that wasn't the idea. There wasn't enough of us with that. The idea was to report back. You see, then they reported back, radio operator reported back to, you know, headquarters. But I mean, they could have been 50, 60 yards away just travelling along. And you didn't open fire unless they stumbled, you know, came right onto you, because there was only about 8 or 9 of you out there. And, I mean, if they were, say, a Chinese fighting patrol, there'd be 40, 50 blokes. I mean, you didn't want them all sort of. But that was very nervy out there, because you just stood there all night. And then the next night you'd done 2 hours on guard and 2 hours off. And the next night.
What would normal guard duties like?
4 hours on and 4 hours. So it weren't too bad. I mean, depending on the position you was in. I mean, they were a bit nervy at night. But
but you knew you had this listening post in front of you, I presume.
But this listening post thing was, because I mean, actually, a patrol could have came behind you and you wouldn't have known. You were a long way out there. You were just watching over this bit of dead ground, really. Which they couldn't see.
The sentry duties, you know, when you're on nights, and so what would you do then? Not when you weren't, you know, when you were back in the position on the knoll.
Well, you would just stand in a trench, looking out over no man's land, really. And you'd just be two of you. There'd be more than two of you on guard, but in pairs, and you'd stand there and look out over no man's land, you know, do your stint.
Did you take it in turns, then, you know?
Yeah, you do 2 hours on and 2 hours off, and then the next night you did 2 hours on and 4 hours off. So you didn't really sleep very much. Every one night you didn't sleep at all. The next night you'd have 2 hours on, 2 hours off, or you don't sleep very much then. Because by the time you lay down, there's something long before you, someone digging you in the ribs and saying, come on, you got to get out again. And then 2 hours on and 4 hours off.
Would it go through the day as well?
And then during the day, we'd be waiting and working about there, trying to tidy the place up.
But would the sentries carry on?
They'd always be somebody on lookout there, yeah, certainly. But we used to get quite a lot of mortar fire and shell fire there, you know, all the blooming time, really, any time. Especially in the afternoon.
So where would you sleep?
You sleep in the bunker. Slept in bunkers.
What were they like compared to the ones you had in reserve?
Very similar, really. A bit smaller, but very similar. You'd sleep in there. You'd have your. We used to have meals with the Welsh Regiment.
Hang on, the bunker. What would be inside it? What would you have? And how would you use it?
Well, it depends on the size of the bunker. Three or four of you. Mainly four men bunkers, and normally made them big enough to get four of you in, and then you'd find up some old bits of iron and anything you could find and make yourself some bunks up. Whatever anything you could find, really. And you'd sleep in them. And they got...
And you'd have a heater in
there? You'd have a heater in there.
Hmm? Lighting? Candles?
No. The, yeah, candles of, for a bit of lighting at night. But you'd you wouldn't really have any lighting. I was thinking that, actually. What we used to have for lighting at night, you know, I can't bloomin' remember.
So when you woke, you wake up and say you are in your bed.
Yeah,
used to stand two. Explain what it was.
Well, what it was, you take your position wherever you were told in the trenches you were, and you'd be an hour before daylight, and you'd stand two for that hour. It'd be dark when you got there, and the dawn would be coming, and the time it was daylight, you stood down. You stand two for an hour at daylight and an hour at dusk. At night, so morning and night, you always stood two for an hour. So they'd wake you up, you'd get woken up with a guard at the time of stand two. And then after, when you stood down, you detailed who was going to stay there, and then someone would go for breakfast.
Tell me about the food, generally.
The food there weren't very good. They weren't very much of it for a start. We'd been on K rations, American K rations, which were an individual ration. You had a box. Everybody was given a box, a little square box, which had three tins in it, like bully beef and bacon and beans and stuff like that, and it was very nutritious and concentrated. You had three tins of food. You had a little tin of fruit. You had toilet paper in it. You had maybe a little bit of chocolate. Oh, and you had a pack. You always got 20 cigarettes in it. Oh, they got his stripe, yeah, Americans. They always got his stripe and camel over American K rations, American K rations. And I went, they were very nutritious, that food, because that was really concentrated. First day, we first issued them, I thought, well, there ain't much there. But you found that after you've been living on it 2 or 3 days, you couldn't eat it all. You know, it was to fill you up, you didn't want it all.
I presume from what you said, you weren't getting that, though, on the Knoll.
Well, then when we got there, when we first went there, we were there for a few days with the Americans, the assault pioneers. And then they withdrew. And then the Welsh regiment came in. And we had to learn about this listening post and one thing or another, and the path through the minefield, because there was another spent minefield in front of it. And when we went with the Welsh, we were on fresh rations.
Not compo, they're fresh rations.
Yeah. But that weren't sufficient. I remember that we were hungry all the time we were there.
What would you get?
Well, very little of everything. You get a few spuds and a bit of meat. You got some meat, yeah. You skipped meat and potatoes and had a cook. And a forward cookhouse cooking this, which was different from when we first went there and the Americans were there, because all their food was cooked way back and brought up, terrific food, brought up in insulated containers. And they had everything at the end of the line. There was bars of chocolate and all the toilet things they want. But the food weren't too good when we were on and all with the Welsh regiment, I'll tell you. And as I say, we were just attached to them.